Coming up on Fronteras, Native American veterans have had an especially difficult time navigating the federal claims system. So the Department of Veterans Affairs is holding summits to try to help.
I feel it's still a lot of lip service. It's hard for us to swallow and hard for us to get anywhere, you know, especially if we're doing it on our own.
We look at the challenges Native vets face. Border agents are seeing more immigrants from beyond Mexico trying to cross the border illegally. But one case left even border officials surprised.
In my 45 years and in my 20 years as sheriff, I had never seen anything like this before. These numbers are really striking in a lot of ways.
A close look at just who tries to cross the border. And we look at the impacts of the Supreme Court's decisions this week on people across the Southwest and beyond. First, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations. It's funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. The Senate voted 68-32 Thursday to pass a bill that would overhaul the nation's immigration system while dramatically boosting border security. As Jill Replegal from our Fronteras desk reports, in the border region, support for the bill was mixed, with criticism on both sides of the political spectrum.
The bill would provide a path to citizenship for an estimated 8 million of the 11 million immigrants currently living in the country illegally. It would also double the size of the Border Patrol to 40,000 agents and build 700 miles of new fencing. After the vote tally was announced in the Senate, the chambers erupted in jubilant chants from immigration supporters.
The sergeant-at-arms will restore order in the gallery.
But in the office of Alliance San Diego, where pro-immigrant activists watched the vote on C-SPAN, the mood was sober. Andrea Guerrero is executive director of the group.
This vote is a vote for a pathway to citizenship, but it's also a vote for the most draconian border enforcement regime we've ever seen. And it's difficult to celebrate it.
Across town and across the political spectrum, former U.S. Attorney Peter Nunez is also not happy with the Senate's bill. He doesn't think the country needs more immigrants, even legal ones. And he's not satisfied with the border security provisions in the bill either. He wants stronger provisions for workplace immigration enforcement.
Jobs is why most people come here illegally. And if you don't deal with jobs, you are not going to solve the problem.
But the bill's tough border security provisions are what got it enough Senate Republican votes to pass. And supporters hope Republicans in the House of Representatives will be similarly swayed. In San Diego, I'm Jill Replegal.
The Supreme Court's ruling overturning the Defense of Marriage Act doesn't legalize gay marriage nationwide, but it does require the federal government to recognize marriages carried out in states where it is legal. As Fronteras reporter Adrian Florido explains, the ruling has big implications for immigration law.
If you are an immigrant or prospective immigrant seeking a U.S. green card, one way to get it would be to marry a U.S. citizen. But until now, same-sex couples were out of luck because under the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, the federal government recognized only heterosexual marriages. The Supreme Court's 5-4 ruling invalidated a central provision of that law, meaning more than 1,000 federal benefits will now become available to married same-sex couples, including...
Now, for the first time, the U.S. citizen will be able to petition for his or her spouse to be able to immigrate legally to the United States.
That's Ginger Jacobs, an immigration lawyer in San Diego. Her clients include many gay binational couples. It's estimated there are up to 40,000 such couples in the U.S. They face separation because although one partner is a citizen, the other is either undocumented or on a temporary visa set to expire. Because of DOMA, green cards have been out of reach even for those couples who have married or wanted to in one of the dozen states where gay marriage is legal. The court's ruling will change that.
We have couples who have green card applications that they prepared already that are literally, you know, in an envelope by their front door.
Rachel Tiven directs the nonprofit Immigration Equality, which advocates for immigration rights for LGBT couples.
And some of those couples called me today to say, I'm taking it to the post office.
Tiven says there should be no delays before the government begins approving green card applications for same-sex spouses, since they should be treated just the way applications from heterosexual couples have always been. In a statement, Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, who oversees the nation's immigration service, said she was pleased with the court's ruling. She said she'll begin implementing it so that, quote, all married couples will be treated equally and fairly in the administration of our immigration laws. The end of DOMA will also affect the ongoing debate over immigration reform on Capitol Hill. In recent weeks, Vermont Senator Patrick Leahy has tried to include a provision in the proposed immigration bill that would grant same-sex couples immigration rights. Many Republicans, including Florida Senator Marco Rubio, strongly opposed that, saying social issues have no place in the immigration bill. But the DOMA ruling now makes that a moot issue. And that's enough for many immigrants who've hinged their hopes on the legal challenge to DOMA.
Hello?
Jesus, it's Adrian.
Hey, Adrian, how are you?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm excited. I'm very, very happy. I'm still processing the information. It's really, really exciting.
Jesus Rodriguez is an undocumented immigrant. He's been with his partner, William Wood, a U.S. citizen, for 4 years. Last year, Rodriguez was detained for driving without a license and placed in deportation proceedings. As his case worked its way through court, he and Wood traveled to Washington, D.C., and they got married. They hoped that if they could postpone the deportation long enough for DOMA to be overturned, Wood might be able to petition for Rodriguez's green card. The judge in his case agreed to stay the deportation until DOMA's fate was decided.
So for me, it's a very liberating information where I can actually focus on, you know, going back to school and work, and I know that I'd be able to continue to live with him.
Rachel Tiven of Immigration Equality says thousands of couples have found similar relief in the Supreme Court's ruling on DOMA. Many who live in states where gay marriage is not legal are planning trips to states where it is.
From 1952 onward, lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people were barred from entering the United States. We were told that because we were gay, we were not good enough to be Americans. And that was the case for individuals until 1990, and it was the case for couples until today.
In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
This week, the Supreme Court also ruled 5-4 that a key provision of the Voting Rights Act, Section 4, is unconstitutional. The High Court invalidated a formula used to determine which states and entities had to get federal clearance to make voting changes because of a history of racial discrimination, saying the formula was based on old data. Voting rights advocates are worried about the effects this decision will have on minority voters. I spoke to Nina Perales, Vice President of Litigation for MALDEF, the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, to get her reaction to this sweeping decision and to see how it will affect the state of Texas.
We were very disappointed in the Supreme Court's ruling. From our perspective, Congress did a very careful job of reauthorizing the act in 2006. It concluded there was still ongoing discrimination in voting, and the court should have deferred to that.
With them striking down Section 4, state leaders are enacting some of the items you all have fought against, such as requiring photo ID at the polls, and they're making those go into effect immediately. What effect do you think that will have?
During the preclearance trial on the Texas voter ID law, which happened back in 2012, we did a good job of showing the court that regular voters would be affected by Texas's law because it was very, very strict and it didn't include a lot of ID that people had, such as photo student IDs and veterans cards. So the effect of putting in the voter ID law right away, because now Texas feels that it can go ahead and do that, will be that there will be people who don't have the ID to vote.
And would this disproportionately affect minorities?
The court concluded in Washington, D.C. that the voter ID law would disproportionately affect minorities because it was more difficult for people of lower income, who in Texas are disproportionately minority, to purchase the kinds of documents that they would need to get ID, such as a Texas birth certificate or a passport.
Now, this case has a lot of moving parts. They did leave Section 5 intact. They just made it unenforceable. They're leaving it up to Congress. Some people aren't holding their breath on that, though. What do you think?
Well, the Supreme Court did toss the ball back towards Congress and say that if Congress believed that there was still ongoing discrimination, it should have a more updated way of deciding which jurisdictions should have to preclear their voting changes. I don't know what Congress is going to do. Congress reauthorized the Voting Rights Act by very wide bipartisan margins in 2006. And so we would expect Congress to step in and step in quickly to provide some protection for minority voters.
You know, I was wondering if this is just going to change the way election battles are fought now. You know, you can still sue, but it'll be after the fact.
Election battles will definitely change. Under Section 5, it was the jurisdiction's responsibility to prove that its changes were non-discriminatory before being allowed to move forward. Now, what will happen is that election changes will go into effect and private parties will be forced to finance lawsuits to prove that the changes are discriminatory. And one example is the Texas 2003 redistricting, where it took us 3 years to finally win a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court that the Texas redistricting plan for Congress was discriminatory. In the meantime, minority voters had to suffer in a discriminatory scheme until we finally got our remedy.
Give me a sense of the historical weight and impact that the Supreme Court made with its decision this week.
The Supreme Court took away a tool that Congress put into place to protect against discrimination right in the middle of a period of time in which we really do need that tool. Just this past year in Texas alone, federal courts found that all three redistricting plans for House, Senate, and Congress discriminated against minorities. And another federal court found that the voter ID law was going to have a negative impact on minority voters. We're right in the thick of battling election-based discrimination.
Even though some of the leaders in these southern states say we're not who we were back then.
Certainly there has been progress. The question for Congress when it reauthorized the Voting Rights Act is, do we still need protection from discrimination? And so on the one hand, we have made a lot of progress. On the other hand, we still have states that are enacting laws that are even intended purposefully to disadvantage minority voters.
So what are the next steps for MALDEF?
Well, here in Texas, we have a case going on right now on redistricting. And now that the governor has taken the position that the redistricting plans that the legislature enacted in 2011 are no longer held back by the lack of their preclearance, we will have to move immediately, and we are filing papers immediately to restrain the redistricting plans from 2011 and make sure they don't go into effect. Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act, although it was born out of a struggle in the Deep South to bring voting rights to African Americans and still serves that vital role, also protects Latinos from voting discrimination. Over 15 million Latinos were living in places where they received the protections of Section 5, and now they are exposed to certainly a greater likelihood of discrimination.
That was Nina Perales, Vice President of Litigation for the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Since the taping of this interview, Congressman Mark Vesey of Fort Worth filed a suit in Corpus Christi federal court claiming that Texas's voter ID law still violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which prohibits voting practices that discriminate by race. The Supreme Court upheld that part of the act. There's still more fronteras coming up. Border agents are seeing more immigrants from beyond Mexico trying to cross the border illegally.
In my 45 years and in my 20 years as sheriff, I had never seen anything like this before. These numbers are really striking in a lot of ways.
A close look at just who tries crossing the border. Stay tuned. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. While Mexicans still make up the vast majority of illegal immigration cases in the United States, there are a growing number of people from other countries sneaking across the border. From the Fronteras desk in Tucson, Michelle Marisco takes a close look at one unusual smuggling case along the Arizona border that has surprised law enforcement.
The older man is nervous but willing to talk, just not here on this Nogales, Sonora street. He fears for his life and won't give his name, so we drive into another part of the city. Up until early June, he worked as a guard outside a smuggler stash house in a rough neighborhood. The smugglers paid this man to keep an eye on things along the city block. He wasn't allowed inside the high white walls of the stash house. He didn't know who was being kept inside.
Then Mexican federal agents came. They brought a bus and took those inside. The guard walked away. Mexican officials say they arrested 58 people. They were mostly Central Americans from Guatemala, but also 11 people from India. But the story didn't end there. Across the border in Santa Cruz County, the smuggling ring had some success, enough to surprise Sheriff Tony Estrada, who Hello? Described the situation from his office.
We had something that obviously we had not experienced before. Between June 9th and 11th, a three-day period, we had a total of 24 individuals from India. In the next following days, there were 11 more. So.
Customs and Border Protection held the 35 Indians in the county jail here, but it's given very few details about where the arrests happened or how they happened.
In my 45 years and in my 20 years as sheriff, I had never seen anything like this before. These numbers are really striking in a lot of ways.
A quick look at the numbers shows a pervasive pattern in the arrest of what the Border Patrol calls other than Mexicans or exotics. Nationwide, 91,000 people from countries besides Mexico were arrested at the border last year. Those nearly tripled since 2001. That's even as arrests overall declined along the border. Last year, 12 people from Afghanistan were arrested, 8 from Iran, 8 more from France, and 7 from Ireland. While it's impossible to know why the immigrants from India tried to come to this country, attorney John Messing believes they may have come to seek asylum from religious persecution.
They're put into a special proceeding for a credible fear determination. That's what it's called.
But here's the catch. To start that process, they had to be captured on U.S. soil first.
Someone has briefed them on how the U.S. system works before they left their country of origin or on the way, before they reached the U.S.
That is to say, someone knew that all they had to do was get those people across the border into Arizona. And if Mexico caught the ringleaders in Nogales, Sonora that day in early June, its government isn't saying. Reporting from Nogales, I'm Michel Marisco.
Veterans all over the country are waiting months and sometimes years before they see a response to their disability claims. Native American veterans have had an especially difficult time navigating the federal claim system, and they comprise more veterans than any other minority group. From the Changing America Desk in Flagstaff, Laurel Morales files a report on a recent veterans summit on the Hopi Reservation.
Hundreds of veterans salute the American flag as the color guard puts it in place at the Veterans Benefit Summit in Tuba City. Jimmy Yazzie was among them. Yazzie was drafted out of high school from the Navajo Nation to fight in Vietnam for the Marines. He was walking point one night for his squad when he set off a landmine that shattered his ankle. Today, at age 60, he still deals with the pain, both physical and psychological.
As long as my kids are around, they keep me happy. My kids go somewhere, I go down. I just stay home, don't go no place.
Yazzie drives about 200 miles each month to get from the reservation to the nearest VA hospital. He has received disability benefits over the years, but he's still waiting on one claim he filed over a year ago.
All they kept telling me is it's being processed. And you just have to wait. Be patient.
Thousands of veterans are running out of patience. Some have waited years to receive compensation benefits that could add up to $3,100 a month. And currently, more than 800,000 claims are pending. American Indian veterans have become discouraged for several additional reasons, like the language barrier and complicated applications. Rick Gray is the commander of the Kayenta Veterans Association, but he still has had trouble understanding the VA system. He filed a claim 2 years ago.
They tell me you need to get a VA representative. So I asked them, where do I get that VA representative? They look at me like I'm stupid. Why are you doing this by yourself? We have all of this available for you. Well, tell me where to go.
Gray came to Tuba City to get answers.
I feel it's still a lot of lip service. It's hard for us to swallow and hard for us to get anywhere, you know, especially if we're doing it on our own.
The VA's Tommy Sowers flew in from Washington for the summit. He says the VA is in the process of converting tens of millions of documents into electronic files and will be completely computerized by the end of the year.
We've prioritized claims in a lot of different ways, whether you're homeless or you have special needs. Now we're prioritizing claims on how old they are, the oldest claims first.
The VA has recently seen a surge of applications because the Obama administration has allowed vets to file claims for Agent Orange, Gulf War Syndrome, and traumatic stress. So Sowers says the VA has hired more employees to deal with the backlog. Many veterans approach Sowers at the summit asking why there aren't more services or even a VA hospital on the Navajo Nation, a reservation the size of West Virginia.
Look, there are places that you can't justify building a new hospital or a facility at. And so we want to bring that care to where the veteran is. We do that in a lot of ways, whether it's mobile vet centers, whether it's partnerships with the Indian Health Service.
One of the mobile vans that provides readjustment counseling for vets is parked outside the meeting. Emery Shepherd drives it all over the Navajo and Hopi reservations.
We're kind of like a driving billboard, so people see the Department of Veteran Affairs. So people come to us about everything. We get questions about VA home loans, housing, because we're pretty much the only ones that are out here.
Even Navajo vets from powerful families are having trouble accessing veteran services. Navajo President Ben Shelley has two veteran sons living at home because they're caught up in veteran housing red tape. Shelley says the federal office is only partially to blame.
Maybe we're not organized here on a reservation more. Whatever help they want, it should be under one roof. When he walks out, he gets what he needs. Instead of giving the runaround to go here and there and there and there.
Shelley says the tribe is working on turning an old hospital in Gallup into such a facility. In the meantime, he's worried about veterans' high rates of alcoholism, homelessness, and suicide. I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook, and we invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. And for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter at fronterasdesk. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.